You know, Lieutenant, you're really a cocky fellow. You're very sure of this, aren't you?
I think that there is a very distinct possibility of murder in this case, yes.
I think there's a possibility, but I don't think it's distinct.
Suppose the murderer in this case was a friend of hers. Suppose the murderer in this case was a man who had access to her house, came and went whenever he wanted to, typed up that letter beforehand when she wasn't around.
Promise me you'll think about it. When you come up with the correct answer, you'll let me know. I'm going to take a nap now. Will you excuse me?
Suppose it was you.
Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Thad Haight.
I'm Carl Wonders.
And this week we are starting season two of Columbo with Etude in Black.
Evocative title.
Beethoven was apparently a sex machine. Or sex fiend. I don't know about
it. I don't know
how good he was at it.
No.
So you're the one that tells us what we know about the episode.
Oh, yeah, okay. So this episode, as you said, is the first episode of season two. It stars John Cassavetes as the murderer. He was a up-and-coming big name in film at the time, or after he was a good friend of Peter Falk's, which is how he got into this episode in the first place. A lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff is that he was pretty miserable to work with and did not enjoy television, looked down on TV people, and was not shy about looking down on TV people, which didn't endear him to anybody really, except for maybe Peter Falk, because Peter Falk already liked him.
He also drank himself to death at the age of 59.
Yes, yes.
Which, dang, I'm just imagining just how much he must have drunk to have died of cirrhosis at 59.
Yeah, that's sad. Let's see. Also starring in this episode, quite a few names, actually. Blythe Danner's in this episode pretty early on in her career.
She's still alive.
She's still alive. The mother of Gwyneth Paltrow, who I believe she's actually pregnant with Gwyneth Paltrow in this episode.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow also still alive.
Yes, she is. This is her first on-screen appearance, apparently. Technically. Maybe not. I don't know, actually. I shouldn't say that. Myrtle Loy pops up briefly at one of the special guest star credits that she gets. She's a film star from way back in the day. People may know her from the Thin Man series. She did a lot of films with Cary Grant. Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House is a particular favorite of mine, actually, from that era.
Listeners will probably not be surprised to hear that I have not seen anything that Myrna Loy has been in except for Columbo.
Yep. let's see. This episode, written by Stephen Bochco, who wrote Murder by the Book and a few other ones in the series. Directed by Nicholas Colasanto, who people will probably best know as Coach from Cheers.
Okay.
Assuming you've seen Cheers.
I have seen Cheers.
Yeah, he played Coach the first couple seasons of Cheers.
Mm-hmm. I've even seen early Cheers. I know who Coach was.
And I'm going to skip ahead to one of your later notes that you've put in the document here, where you commented that the episode is moving slowly for you.
Yes, which... I did watch last week's at 1.5 speed because I was pressed for time. But even so, even if we take that apart, this like, I'm just like, this is dragging so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Columbo was a very successful show. It was also a very expensive show to make. And in this episode, there's a ton of location shooting. John Cassavetes was probably not cheap to get to be on the show, and the studio had decided that they wanted a few episodes to be an extra 30 minutes, so they would be at 2 hours with commercials instead of an hour and a half. Most Columbo episodes are 90 minutes, including the commercial breaks. Mm-hmm. And their thinking was, well, we can cram in another half an hour and get a whole bunch of ad revenue out of that and make more money on these things. So that's why they padded out a few of the episodes. This is the first of those. One thing that they did differently in this episode than in subsequent ones is they actually just added scenes later on. There is a 90-minute cut of this episode, apparently, that was shown outside the U.S. So there are some scenes, I believe.
I bet that one probably doesn't feel like it drags as much.
No, probably not. But it's actually better than what they did later, because later they just pad existing scenes and add, you know, they, instead of cutting away, they let it go longer. And mm-hmm. there are some moments that where if you keep that in mind, you'll say, ah, this is where they're dragging things out to fill the runtime rather than a few scenes grafted on, like the one where Columbo goes to John Cassavetes' house and does absolutely nothing plot related and just kind of hangs around and asks him how much his house costs and stuff like that was a scene that they added in that just to add to the runtime. And the scene that we both commented on where Columbo's talking about the figure and the attractiveness of the murder victim feels to me like an added scene. I don't know for sure if it is or not, but that was a weird scene.
That was well, my thought on that was, well, that would not have been in this if this was made today.
No.
Yeah, he's like, girl has a wonderful shape, doesn't she? Like, what?
Yeah, what are you doing? And I even said in my notes, like, I liked the scene at the beginning because he's like, here's what the police told me. And it's like, Caucasian woman, 35 or whatever, and gives, like, she's a piano player, and that's, like, all he has, like, on the file. And then he's, like, looking through the photos, and he's seeing all the things she's done and stuff. And he's like, and here's all they tell me is this. And I think that's an interesting and kind of a nice sentiment. And then he just veers off into commenting about her shape and her eyes and how other things that just gets really gross very quickly.
So is Mr. Miyagi in the 90-minute cut?
Yeah, he's the one that opens the door. You know what? I don't know, actually, now that... Yeah, in the shorter version, I don't think so. I wouldn't think so anyway. Because you have that scene where he goes to his house, and then you have the scene right after that where John Cassavetes runs into him sitting in his car.
Yeah.
And it's basically the same scene again, only they talk about the murder instead of the cost of the house and stuff. But it that scene feels to me like they didn't have that earlier scene, which they didn't.
Right.
They filmed that later, which is why John Cassavetes' hair is different. But anyway,
so this is going to be a weird thing that probably only occurs in my brain, but I kept thinking that John Cassavetes kind of looked like Michael Eisner.
I can kind of see that,
specifically from like the 90s, which is what I think of Michael Eisner when he would introduce Wonderful World of Disney.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Obviously more hair, but
John Cassavetes like has more hair. Yes.
John Cassavetes has more hair than Michael Eisner did then or does now.
Yes. I don't remember Michael Eisner wearing seersucker jackets either.
There are some people that might say Michael Eisner was a bigger villain, though. I don't know.
Who you talk to and what the context is, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not sure what context it could possibly be. I just know there are in the fandom of the Disney company, which exists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the fandom of the Disney films. I'm talking about the fandom of the Disney company. Michael Eisner is a controversial figure.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Also, it's weird that there's a fandom of the Disney company, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, that can be our Star Trek connection, because Michael Eisner was previously at Paramount and was involved
in
the launching of several of the Star Trek films. So.
Greenlit, yes, some of the really good Star Trek movies back in the 80s.
There's that great story about how he didn't want to hire Leonard Nimoy to direct Star Trek 3.
He believed that rumor that Leonard Nimoy only agreed to be in Star Trek 2 if Spock died,
right,
which was not true.
Because as we are wont to do, we both were looking for Star Trek connections in this episode and really couldn't find any.
Yeah, we couldn't find. Now, I mean, it's possible. I didn't go through the entire list of actors on IMDb. So it's possible, you know, like somebody in the background or one of the orchestra members was in Star Trek. But I checked all the named characters that were like important, and none of them were. But like five of them were all on episodes of The Virginian,
which is not something I've ever seen.
I haven't either. My dad used to watch it. It's a Western. I think it ran forever, which is why people were on it so long. So many people were on it.
James Olsen was in something called Strange New World, which has nothing to do with Star Trek.
Also, my first thought, seeing that name in the credits and then seeing him on screen, I'm like, wow, Jimmy Olsen let himself go.
He's the guy that I would have thought could have popped up in a Star Trek episode at some point, because he's one of those people who's been in everything.
Yeah, and I thought the murderer's assistant, who was also in like everything,
yes,
might have, but he didn't.
No, that guy pops up in everything too.
Yeah, and I even checked Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, the actor. Yes. But no, he was not in Star Trek either.
Yeah, James McKeegan is the guy we're talking about, who was his assistant. He was in a lot of Perry Mason movies.
Yeah, he was apparently a regular character in Perry Mason, because he was the same character in all.
Oh, yeah. Would it surprise you if I told you he was on Murder, She Wrote?
I would expect all of them to have been on Murder, She Wrote. So, like, for a couple reasons. One, Murder, She Wrote ran forever. Two, if they had a decent working relationship with the production of Columbo, it would make sense that they'd be called in for Murder, She Wrote.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, sort of like how, you know, like, because you can, whenever you see shows that are made by the same people, you'll see a lot of the same familiar faces.
Yeah, of course.
Like, there's a reason why a bunch of the people in 12 Monkeys were also in Star Trek Picard Season 3.
Yes.
Okay, anyway.
Sorry, I've been spending the times trying to find any actors who are connected to Star Trek.
Well, I mean, there obviously aren't that many degrees away, because, well, all of these actors were in Columbo, and other Star Trek actors have been in Columbo. So
yes,
we're only one
degree away from from Star Trek.
Exactly.
I did find out that the guy who plays the veterinarian is the reason Michael J. Fox is credited as Michael J. Fox.
Oh, okay.
Because his name is Michael Fox, and he, you know,
right.
Screen Actor Guild reasons.
Okay.
Anyway, we're off to a great start.
minutes in, and we're still talking about who's in this episode. Although, I don't know, we've got maybe 5 minutes of usable content out of that 23 minutes.
Yeah, maybe.
And here's the part where I admit that I've actually never listened to our podcast, so I have no idea how heavily or not you edit this.
I'm cutting that out.
And that part I'm sure you're going to leave in.
That may end up at the end. Like a post-credit scene.
I mean, I listened to it as we record it.
That's true. Well, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, no, I've never listened to an Infinite Diversity episode that Chrissy edits either, so you don't feel bad. It's not just you.
I'm behind on so many podcasts, I don't have time to listen to my
right.
own ones.
I have other podcasts that I never listened to the first time that I need to hear before I need to listen to myself.
Yeah.
So I wish that the completely legitimate copies of Columbo that I watch that were ripped from the Blu-ray didn't include at the beginning the, you know, here's what's coming up on Columbo.
Oh, I know. Some of them, like, give away a lot.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in the first season, if I remember right. This is a new thing.
I think so, yes. But it's also like, similarly, the completely legitimate copies of Murder, She Wrote that I watch, because I've been off and on doing a watch through of Murder, She Wrote, also include way too much of here's what's coming. Oh, I'm sorry. In Jessica Fletcher's voice tonight on Murder, She Wrote.
I can hear that. I can hear it. I haven't seen the show in so long, and I can still hear it.
Tonight on Murder, She Wrote.
It's like, I understand that you wanted that on live TV to suck the viewer in who was channel surfing or watching the previous program. Mm-hmm. But why is it on the Blu-ray?
It's part of the episode.
But it...
I just think of Battlestar Galactica, where they subverted that whole thing and were like,
yeah,
we're going to make you think something is going on that isn't.
Honestly, I rarely even notice what happens in that like fast thing in BSG.
Although there is the one episode that they totally ruin the ending of. And I remember telling Caleb to skip, like, when you watch this one episode, skip the.
Oh, is it the one when Callie gets airlocked?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they ruined that in the freaking promos on Sci-Fi.
Oh, that's... Yes, they did. Yep.
So, like, I already knew that before I watched the episode.
What are you doing? I'm surprised it didn't spoil who the final Cylon was.
No, well, even they were like, what?
No one cares.
The guy that chooses what goes in the promo is like, no, that's bullshit. I'm not putting that in there.
So my first question about this actual episode is, did people, like, everybody have their own stationery back then?
I guess. Also, why does Jennifer Wells have only one N in her name?
There's some Jennifers that only have one N. It's weird, but...
Yeah, but, like, I look at it and I read it as Jennifer.
Jennifer. I mean, yeah. One N and an E in Wells.
I've seen that before. I had not seen Jennifer before.
Okay. Okay, so John Cassavetes is going to kill this woman who he's having an affair with because she laid down the law and was like, you're either going to divorce your wife or I'm going to come out and, you know, tell the world that we're sleeping together, because what else did you think was going to end up happening eventually?
Convenient that they rehashed their off-screen conversation for exposition.
Yeah, wasn't it? Thank you for that. So I sort of like his plan in concept, where he's pretending that his car doesn't work, so it's going to get locked up in a garage somewhere. Kudos to the set designer for that bathroom, by the way. That really does look like a garage bathroom.
Oh, absolutely. But, like, what would he have done if the mechanic had noticed the window?
What would he have done if they noticed the window? What would they have done if they had actually taken the keys out of the car and put them somewhere safe?
What would he have done if they were working late?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even late. It was daytime.
Yeah. Well, was it really daytime? I mean,
that's true. Bad day for night again. I like later when he compensates. It's like a compensation thing where instead of it being bad for day for night, they have him wearing sunglasses in the dark. Yes. Inside.
Yeah. So in his like secret plan where he runs down to the garage. Mm-hmm. At one point, he gets on a moving sidewalk, which, one, I didn't realize they were just moving sidewalks outside in Los Angeles, but okay. And two, it's going the other way.
I had not noticed this. I think I noticed that it was a moving sidewalk, but I didn't notice that it was running and going the wrong way until you pointed it out.
So, like,
yes, it is.
If he's in a hurry to do this, why is he doing the thing that's going to slow him down?
Well, when there's a perfectly good ramp to go up, to run down.
Right. And they could have just shot it from the other direction. I mean.
Yeah.
Did they go for the realistic thing? Were they showing an actual path from the Hollywood Bowl to a garage nearby or something?
They may have been. I mean, I'm 95% sure this is the real location that they're shooting around.
Why would you
have a fake Hollywood Bowl?
Well, that's a very good point. Yes. I mean, I assume that's the real Hollywood Bowl. Couldn't have told you what the Hollywood Bowl looked like to save my life. So,
but okay. So we should say he's a conductor of the orchestra. He seems sort of like a Leonard Bernstein type, like celebrity conductor guy.
Yeah.
If assuming that's a thing outside of Leonard Bernstein, I don't know.
I know there was that Amazon Prime show about that conductor for that one, Mozart in the Jungle.
True. But so his plan is, I'm going to go to my dressing room and hang where I usually hang out before the concert and then sneak away and do all this stuff. So first of all, he gets into his tuxedo first and then puts on a trench coat.
Choice.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was so that he would drop the flower, but also why?
I mean, let's correct it here. He doesn't want to drop the flower. It's just what happens.
No, I mean, that production wise, that was so he would drop the flower.
Story setup wise, he wears this tuxedo with the carnation in it so that he can drop it on the, at the murder scene.
But it would have made more sense for him to have waited to change into his tuxedo when he gets back, especially since he affects as if he is putting on his tuxedo as he leaves his dressing room.
Right. And if he took off his jacket, he would have noticed he didn't have his boutonniere anymore, which, well, that would be a problem. Also, if you're good, he clubs the woman over the head with a giant ashtray. What if he got blood on his tuxedo? That would be a problem.
What if it hadn't killed her at first? I was impressed that he killed her in one hit.
I don't know if he did kill her because, I mean, maybe
you
he did.
He just knocked her out and then finished her off with the gas. That's possible.
It could be.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
I mean, because he's staging it to look like a suicide. And I know you can kill yourself in this manner, but it seems not the best way to do it.
All the stories that I've heard of people doing it this way, they stick their head in
the oven. Right. Not perched on a stool, I don't know, 3 feet away.
Also, one thing I noted while watching this is that I knew what he was doing because I once had I lived in a cheap apartment with an ancient gas range, but blowing out the pilot lights is not a universally obvious thing.
No,
in 2025.
Not anymore. No. Well, especially with that. She has that over the range oven that I'm guessing is like a salamander kind of thing or something. These days it's a microwave, but not then, obviously. I mean, it's a good thing he blew out the pilot lights because that could have been an explosion.
Yeah.
And I do like that he had the forethought of, I'm going to sit in the chair and fall onto the thing to A, damage the stove, and then B, know where to put the body.
Yeah, modern stoves, one, a lot of them aren't gas anymore, but two, the ones that are don't usually have pilot lights anymore.
No. For safety reasons.
So interestingly, on my stove, it is trivially easy to skip right past the ignition and put the gas on full blast.
It really, yes. Same with mine.
So it is safe, but it's dangerous in a whole different way.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of when I turn on my grill and I am holding the button down and then all of a sudden it goes whoomp and like...
I'm like No, because I have definitely turned on the burner, or thought I turned on the burner, turned around, done something else. I smell gas. Yep. Uh-oh. And then, of course, I turn it off and don't try to turn it on for a little bit.
No.
But anyway.
So last question I have about this setup, I think, is he takes a monogrammed briefcase with him just to carry gloves and a handkerchief in. And I guess maybe the staged suicide note, but
yeah, I do appreciate how careful he is about using gloves and cloths, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he even does it in the bathroom when he opens the lock.
His fingerprints wouldn't have been that surprising in that bathroom because he was in there.
True. Yeah.
Well, on the window, they might have been. But
yeah.
But like on the doorknob, that would have been fine.
All right. I lied. I have one other comment to make about this plan, is that he took a very conspicuous car and parked it like literally around the corner from the driveway. Anyway.
So did you think he was going to hit one of those other cars when he pulled out of the garage? Because I thought he was.
Oh, when he leaped like at the beginning before he goes to the apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like inches from one of those cars.
It really was. Yeah. and this is a morbid thing, but I appreciate, that's the wrong word, I give them credit for thinking that they had to murder the parrot.
Yes.
Because I remember thinking, like, when I was watching this, I'm like, they're going to get there and the parrot's going to, like, talk to Columbo or something stupid. And I'm like,
I thought the parrot was going to tell Columbo who did it.
Atac tus in cerils. Atac tus in cerils.
I appreciate that we didn't see the dead parrot. They just,
yes, they looked in the cage and you knew what they were finding in there.
Now that's what I call a dead parrot. No, it's stunned.
Jack Cassavetes has a reputation of being a very fine actor in a lot of movies. He could have worked on his fake conducting a little bit, I think. It's pretty bad.
He's like really going at it.
I know.
And I don't know how to conduct, but he's like,
it's like he's sword fighting.
Yeah. Also, once again, we have television that are showing far more detail than any television could possibly show in 1972.
Yeah. My favorite is early on when they're setting up the stage and there's the two monitors and you could just tell it's rotoscoped.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite camera trick in this episode is when he's conducting and they have the freeze frame of him realizing he doesn't have his carnation on his jacket.
Yes, that's a good one.
And then we cut to Columbo at seemingly at the doctor's office. And it turns out he's at the vet.
How do the police always know where to call?
That's a great question.
Because it's a trope at this point. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's for you.
Yep.
I'm assuming that we will not see this dog ever again.
No, he's becomes a semi-recurring part of the story.
Oh, nice. So we've now got Columbo and Hooch. Okay.
Yep. And the gag is not played out, if I remember correctly, beyond this episode. So I can tell you what the dog's name ends up being if you want me to tell you that.
Sure, go for it.
The dog's name is Dog.
Okay. That seems, yeah, I can see that.
And I love that it's a rumpled basset hound because it's basically Columbo in dog form.
Yes. I mean, the doctor makes a good point where he says, you always hear about it, but I've never met a dog named Fido.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong.
No,
The stereotypical dog name, mm-hmm. but I have never met someone whose dog was named Fido.
Nope, me neither.
Or Rover, for that matter. Rover.
Yeah. That girl's like, gee, where'd you come up with that name?
That girl is spot on, though. Don't leave your dog in the car with the window all the way up.
Right. I mean, it's nighttime, but still, you don't do that.
No. Yeah, and it's, you know, California, so mm-hmm. it's not. But still, just don't do that.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the fake out with the girl later where Columbo thinks she's going to point to the killer and she actually points to Jimmy Olsen.
So why did Jimmy Olsen go to the house in his tuxedo?
Because he probably figured he wouldn't have time to change in between.
I guess. I appreciate that she was cheating on John Cassavetes the whole time.
Yes. And very well may still have if he had divorced his wife and stayed with her.
Yep. So now we get to that awful scene where Columbo's commenting on the dead woman. I am pretty sure actually that this is a tacked on scene because that guy that he's talking to, I don't think we ever see again.
No.
We get the cigar chomping guy later who I just find hilarious.
That the guy he's talking to, his tie is enormous.
That's not the first time we've commented on width of tie in Columbo. Probably not the last
probably
either.
Probably won't be the last.
You are not wrong.
What is that guy credited as? Which he Detective one? Uncredited? No, that's a different guy.
Detective Uncredited might be the guy with the cigar.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know who this guy is.
I feel like they could have got Charles Napier to play that guy. Maybe not yet. Maybe he was too young then. But Oh, and I love the brief, like, flash reflection in the glasses of the carnation under the piano.
I like that, too, yeah. Yeah, Detective Uncredited is definitely the cigar guy. This guy, I don't think he... We never get his name in the show.
Mm-mm. That's why he's Detective Uncredited.
Well, no, I meant the other guy.
No, because he's just there in that one scene.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who he is.
Oh.
Oh, I guess he's probably the other detective uncredited. Lou Nova. No, that's the cigar guy.
Lou Nova is the cigar guy?
Lou Nova is definitely the cigar guy.
Okay.
Henry Beckman is the... Well, no. Yeah, I think Yes, Henry Beckman, Detective Uncredited, is the guy he's talking to about the figure.
Okay.
He was on the X-Files.
Yep. I think you and I are both looking to see if he was in Star Trek.
Yes. He was on MacGyver.
He was in The Virginian.
They were all in The fucking Virginian. He was in Trapper John, M.D., Welcome Back, Cotter. The Life and Times of Grizzly Adams.
Oh, another great TV show name from the 60s. The Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theater. So I randomly clicked on some guy who was a restaurant in the restaurant and uncredited, and he was also in The Virginian.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was on Star Trek.
No.
But they were all on The Virginian, everybody.
However, he was in both The Man and The Girl from U.N.C.L.E.
I did not know The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. was a thing. Mm-hmm. I know I've talked about this already. I know Robert Vaughn as the guy from a local law firm commercial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so in the 90s and 2000s, Robert Vaughn did... law firm commercials, like, for what? Different law firms all over the country.
That's amazing.
Like, he would just do the same commercial, but yeah, he would just say the different names. And one of the ones here in this area did it. So he's like, you know, he's like, tell them you need Metzger Wickersham.
Do they, like, serendipitously cut away when he says the actual name of the law firm to something else?
No, he would, like, do the whole thing. So, yes, in fact, that is exactly how they did it. He did film a whole bunch, and then he would shoot a... So, yes, they were cuts to the... He would film the commercials, then say different law firms' names, and they would insert them into different markets. Yep. Yeah, if you go to Robert Vaughn Other Works on IMDb... it just lists so many TV commercials. And this is an incomplete list, too.
Would it surprise you if I told you Robert Vaughn was in an episode of The Virginian?
Oh, one of these actors was in Spy Hard. I forget which one now. But I noticed...
One of these actors was in Spy Hard?
One of the actors in this week's Columbo was inspired. It was one of the women. I don't remember which one now. Okay, this episode of Columbo was better than Spy Hard. Just bring that back.
Pat Morita was in it.
Maybe that's who I was. He was not a woman, but no, that might be who I was thinking of. That's probably who I was thinking of. I don't know why I thought it was one of the women.
I don't either.
So, that weird racist scene with Pat Morita.
Yeah.
What the? What? Why?
Well, and then I was saying how he's credited as houseboy in the credits, which is... Ugh.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why he's there. I don't know why the scene's there other than to pad out the runtime. Although it has, like, my favorite encapsulation of the Columbo dynamic of the entire thing, where Columbo goes to visit John Cassavetes at his house and is looking around, and he's like, how much do you pay in real estate taxes? And he says something like $18,000 a year, and he does the calculations. And then he asks him about the furniture, and he figures that, again, for 1972 or whatever it is, that he's sunk about $900,000 into this house.
That's a lot of money today, much less then.
Yeah. And Columbo says he makes $11,000 a year, and that he says he does the math in his head, and he says, that's 90 years of work for me just to live here, and that's without eating. And it's just that whole thing of Columbo going after these rich assholes.
Yes.
Who, for the most part, underestimate him, although I don't feel that that's the case in this episode. I think that, and part of it may just be because, Falk and Cassavetes were good friends, and they play off each other pretty well.
Yeah. $900,000 in 1972 was $7 million today.
Wow.
$11,000 in 1972 is $86,000. So honestly, Columbo's doing pretty well. Not bad.
No, Columbo's doing pretty well for himself.
That's more than I make.
Wow. I mean, it's in LA, but still.
But still.
It's pretty good.
$86,700, actually. So yeah, like that's.
Yeah.
I mean, you figure that's probably a single income family, though. His wife probably doesn't work. So, sure. But still. That is enough. You can live in LA on $86,000 today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You probably can't own a house, but you can live there. Certainly, I would think it means that he could afford to get a different car, as the mechanic suggested.
I love the
I
part.
Only work on foreign on foreign cars. Foreign this car. Is a foreign car.
Well, there are limits. I love that. That was another one of those moments where I'm like, but he has a Peugeot. It's a foreign car. And then they call it out. So, oh, here's Jimmy Olsen or James Olsen bursting in to the murder scene, yelling, which he does a lot in this episode.
Do you think that the houseboy ever has to put the wax on his the murderer's car?
Only if he takes it off, too.
Yes. Anyway, Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, no, he just shows up and has So, talking about padding out the runtime, that whole subplot could have been taken out of the movie or the episode, and it wouldn't have mattered.
Just remove Jimmy Olsen?
Yeah, delete Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, that.
I mean,
and then you don't have to have Columbo go to the jazz club.
Nope. Watch him get drunk. You lose the whole fake out, but the fake out doesn't really accomplish anything anyway.
No. And then you don't have to have the whole the board meeting.
Nope.
There's a whole bunch that you could just
the scene with Myrtle Loy and James Olsen bickering at each other.
Although that board meeting does give Columbo the motive, because he's talking to Myrtle Loy, and she explains that
he would be kicked off he would get fired.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
But they could have done that in a less circuitous way. Although they could have done that in a less circuitous way is kind of the describes all of Columbo, really.
Well, because this one in particular, it bugs me that the linchpin clue is the one that we see at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing new that gets discovered. I like that because later he goes with he takes the typewriter to him and shows him that the letters don't match up, which is another thing I did kind of think of in the back of my head.
I also thought of that. Yeah.
But again, that doesn't mean anything necessarily. I mean, it means that she didn't type the note, but, and to his point, Columbo makes the point about how most people tend to write out their suicide notes rather than type them.
I guess rich people don't care, but like there's the scene where Columbo and, what is the murderer's name?
Alex
Benedict.
Benedict. Yeah.
are talking in the foyer of the house where he's talking about the 90,000.
Mm-hmm.
And like Benedict is just smoking a cigarette casually standing there. Like there's no place for him to ash it. Is he just like dropping ashes on the floor of his $7 million house?
Well, Pat Morita's going to clean him up for him,
I guess.
Well, Columbo's got a cigar going.
Well, yeah, but that's just Columbo.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, when you smoke a cigarette, you smoke a cigarette much faster.
That's true.
You ash a lot faster with a cigarette than you do with a cigar.
Yeah, this entire scene just is Columbo goes to the house, asks him about the cost of the house, and then gets him to sign a piece of paper for him to show up so his wife can show off to her friends. Yeah. And that's it.
Did he want the signature for something? No, because it never comes up. Yeah. Then he goes to the garage and has another conversation with him.
Yep. I do like that this comes back later because he's like, oh, yeah, and while I was in the car, I noticed the odometer was different, which is a nice little clue.
Yeah. But again, all of this is circumstantial evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But we also talk about that in a lot of these murderers, if they don't admit that Columbo got them, a good lawyer could probably get them off.
Yes. Yeah, there are very few instances where it's an open and shut case and they're going to get convicted. I think this dinner or this luncheon scene must be another one of those padding things because I don't know why it's here.
Yeah, not really.
Well, I mean, the mother is setting up a scholarship fund so that people stop writing salacious stories about the murder and everything, which kind of fits in with her character in a way. And it sort of sets off her Benedict's wife about distrusting him again.
Yeah, I guess.
But still.
And then Columbo's playing chopsticks.
Because of course he is.
And this is where he shows the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to the jazz club to talk to Jimmy Olsen.
And he lies about not being upset. And he shows that he's not getting upset because he's drinking a lot, which is, you know. Oh, yeah. And then we find out that the carnations are grown in this little pot, even though they're clearly fake. I mean, those might not be, but the one on his lapel is absolutely a fake carnation.
Yeah. Well, it's to point out that they're a special kind of carnation that aren't the kind that you would normally get at a florist. So if you do find one somewhere else, it probably came from here, I think, is the idea.
Yeah. His wife confronted him about being unfaithful with the woman that got murdered, and he denied it, and now she's bringing it up again. And we get the lovely moment when he tells her to smile for him, which is, ugh. And then, God, this scene at the ballet just has, as I said in my notes, has aged like milk. Where the girl is like, do you want me for my body or for my brains or something like
and he says mind. Both?
Both. No. Like, what? What are you doing? No.
Yeesh.
I mean, he plays it off. He's like, give me a break, you know, but still, like, that's not what you say to a child.
And then, if you saw him, would you recognize him? Of course. Hitler.
I know the cut to Hitler.
Yeah, my notes, I have suddenly Hitler, which is a phrase I don't think I have ever written before in my life.
I actually had to go back because I was like, did I miss something? And then it's like, nope, it's just a smash cut to Hitler.
This is this is some very powerful music for a documentary.
For a documentary about Nazis. Yes. God help any of these players if Benedict loses the baton out of his hand, because the way he's just stabbing the air is dangerous.
Also, why is he dressed like a referee?
That's a great question. I hadn't even noticed that until you pointed it out.
So this is where we get the fake out and the girl points to Jimmy Olsen.
Yep.
Then we have the board meeting where Benedict pretends you forgot what Jimmy Olsen's real name was. Paul.
Yeah. Okay. I even have it in my notes, but yeah.
And then Benedict comes into the board meeting pretending to try to defend Jimmy Olsen, but really just try to, you know, push the blame more on him, really.
Yes. By pointing out that he had been in jail for assault and all that stuff.
Well, with his experience as Michael Eisner, he's able to get board meetings. He's able to manipulate board meetings very well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then there's the scene with Olson and Columbo and Myrna Loy, and he's sitting in the corduroy couch or corduroy chair. And I haven't commented, like, I've seen him in other things and he always looks like that. So that hair is like his choice.
Such a bad choice,
isn't it? Like, especially when you have a very large forehead.
Speaking from firsthand experience, mm-hmm. when you have that little amount of hair on the front of your head, cut your losses. Literally cut your losses.
Well, and like when he turns his head, you can see he has like bald patches in his entire head is like a giant comb over.
Yeah. If it wasn't combed flat like that, it would not look nearly as bad.
No.
But yeah.
I do really enjoy, like, because he's bantering back and forth with Myrna Loy in this scene. And I love the line when because she's saying about how he did something bad in his past. And he was like, I'm sure you snuck a glass of gin during Prohibition.
And she's like, if you're trying to get me on your side, you're not helping.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
something to that effect.
Yeah. But then Columbo literally like starts staring at the ceiling at the moment when he realizes that he could have been fired, or that Benedict could be fired for doing something bad. Folk sort of overacts that moment, I think, a little bit, but it's okay. And here's where technology plays a role again in solving the mystery, because he takes the dog to the vet again and sees the replay of the concert.
Again, which is very clearly not actually a TV screen.
Yep.
Which, as we've said before, when originally watching this on a TV screen, there was no way you would tell that it was not actually.
And you can see how Falk is very deliberately not putting his hand in front of the screen.
Yes.
Or walking in front of the screen, because that would mess everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have the Chekhov's carnation clue mm-hmm. come back, which is all Columbo has.
Yeah. And it's, again, a good lawyer could probably have gotten him off.
Yeah. I mean, I do appreciate, and I had forgotten this because I remembered that the carnation was the thing, but I'd forgotten about how there was the news footage of him leaving the apartment with the carnation on. But then Columbo already knew that because he saw him put the carnation on. But at least there's evidence that he has a carnation on after the murder and not while he's conducting. But again, he could have put that on at any point, and all they have is his wife not backing him up.
Saying that she didn't remember seeing him do it. Yeah.
And which any lawyer would immediately excuse away.
Yeah. I do appreciate when he realizes he's got... I do like how he tells his wife he always loved her.
Yes.
Where did it come from?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
Well, on the tape at the concert, you weren't wearing a flower. Now on this film, coming out of Mrs. Wells' apartment, you have a flower. Where did it come from?
Are you actually trying to pin this murder on me with that?
Yes. Because the only place you could have gotten it was at Miss Wells' apartment when you picked it up at the piano. And that means you had to have been there earlier.
I'm very disappointed in you, Columbo. I simply went into my dressing room, pinned on my flower after the concert, and left. Janice always brought in cut flowers every day, didn't you?
Why would you put it on after the concert? Why would you put it on after the concert?
I don't know. I was in shock. I'm confused. I just heard that Miss Wells was dead.
Mrs. Benedict, is that the way you remember it? You were there. Did he put on a flower after the concert?
It's all right, love. Go ahead.
No. No, he didn't put on a flower afterwards.
Let me just see you alone one moment.
I could have stood for anything, Alex, anything in the world.
I'm guilty, you know that. Just play record. I love you.
He's like, for the record, I love you. And he's like, yeah. Okay. I mean, even if you are an asshole, okay, mm-hmm. at least. I also appreciate that his wife is willing to back him in anything except murder. So, like, what that means is, if he had not killed the pianist and she had made it public, his wife would have probably stayed with him.
Mm-hmm.
He would have lost his job as a celebrity conductor, but he could have kept the wife and the $7 million house.
Well, I was unclear about whether he would just lose his job conducting this particular orchestra or like what his, because I think a lot of his means come from his mother-in-law.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
So that would be an issue, I guess. But
well, he has a $7 million house he could sell.
That's true.
All I'm saying is to our listeners, if you're considering it, murder is not the only answer. I mean, it certainly is an answer, but it is not the only answer.
Just don't.
Don't murder. Yeah. I think we can make the bold. We here at License to Spiel can come out with the bold, very controversial opinion that murder is wrong. I think we can do that.
It's like the reverse Gordon Gekko. Murder is wrong.
Well, I mean, greed can still be good even when murder is wrong.
That's true.
So yeah, and he tells Columbo, you knew all along, didn't you? And Columbo nods.
Yep, he's like, yep, I did.
Which comes back to the very first time you showed me an episode of Columbo, and I said, so is this what this show is, where he just toys with these people for an hour? And yeah,
usually, yeah. There are a few times when he has to figure something out. But a lot of times he knows from the beginning. And I don't know if I've said this before or not, but my sister and I used to always joke about how Columbo knows, because it's always whoever's trying to be the most helpful initially is the one who did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to the very first Columbo, the guy who, he's like, tries to work with Columbo. He's like, I want to find the person who killed my wife. And
yeah.
All right. Well, that was Etude in Black. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was too long.
It was too long. I agree. I think pretty much every single one of the extended episodes has that problem.
Fine.
But I mean, for better or worse, there are, this has always been one that people like a lot, and I've always thought it was just fine.
No, I've seen, there were several that are better than this one. I think
it's my favorite of season two so far, I can say that.
It's not my least favorite, I don't think.
No. I mean, it's better than the Eddie Albert one. It's better than I'd say about half of them. I'd put it at the level of the one with Leslie Nielsen, which I thought was perfectly fine. You know.
Yeah, it is a perfectly acceptable episode of Columbo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, in a weird way, it reminds me a little bit of the Murder, She Wrote versus Columbo is the same problem as that we have with, like, streaming Star Trek and 90s Star Trek, where if you have a dud episode but you're making 26 of them, it's fine. You know, if you have a dud episode and you're only making 6 of them in a season, that's a bigger issue.
And boy, there are some stinkers in Murder, She Wrote.
Oh my God, yes. I'd say they're probably only batting about 500 on those. I mean, in fact, there are some in there that I would consider a negative episode. Like, it's actually a minus one.
Yeah, but then there's like all those episodes with Jerry Orbach to make up for that.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I watched them, but I seem to remember anytime Grady shows up, it's never really a good thing.
No. No, Grady sucks. Also, I am still early, but early in Murder, She Wrote in my watching, because I only watched occasionally.
Yeah.
But I will make the completely non-controversial statement that Amos Tupper is the better sheriff.
Yeah. Like, I know he gets a lot of crap, and rightfully so, for whatever accent he thinks he's doing. But I feel like the show is definitely loses something when he leaves.
Yeah.
And that's, and as much as I love William Wyndham, he doesn't fill the void quite as well. And what's his name? Mort?
Yeah, Mort is, meh.
He's just there.
Well, I mean, but the best part is there is a period where you get both Amos and Seth.
And Seth, yes.
Yeah, actually, I think I haven't watched any since that, since the one with the, on the bus where they all did it.
Oh, that's a good one, though.
Yeah, that was a really good one. I need to get back into it.
That's the one that has what's her name from The Exorcist, right?
There's a bunch of people in it.
Murder Takes the Bus.
That's it. You know, the one that is very clearly taking some cues from Agatha Christie.
Yes. Yeah, Linda Blair. Yeah, Linda Blair, Larry Linville, Rue McClanahan, Don Stroud.
Yeah, isn't Larry Linville like the only one that wasn't in on it?
Well, no one was in on it. Like, they all had motives, but it was the bus driver that did it.
Right.
And he killed him twice.
Yeah, that's right.
I enjoy that the guy who gets on IMDb, the guy who gets murdered in that on the bus, his IMDb photo is a photo from him in Columbo.
But yes, Rue McClanahan and Larry Linville were like the you know, obvious standout guest stars that week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Linda Blair. Yeah, it was a good episode. Actually, no, I did watch a few after that. I finished off season one because there is an episode where William Wyndham is in.
But he's somebody else, right?
He's somebody else. Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one where he is part of the conspiracy of murderers. That's the final episode of season one. So,
okay. Yeah.
I still have a lot of Murder, She Wrote to watch, but you know, maybe I should wait because at some point we're going to finish Columbo and then we can watch Murder, She Wrote.
Well, what is it? There are 264 episodes.
At the rate we're going through Columbo, we will in fact murder. If we tackle Murder, She Wrote, we're good for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Grady is Lieutenant Daniels in Insurrection.
Yes, he is.
How did I not put that together?
You're right. Yeah, no, he is. I don't even have to, like, I didn't have to look at anything. As soon as you said that, I'm like, yeah.
He's also in Star Trek First Contact, but he didn't have a name then.
He was probably the same guy.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
But yes.
I mean, he does the same thing. He shows up looking disheveled and then gives bad news to whoever's in command. Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensedtospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS.
This is humiliating. Wait a minute, you're a great detective. You knew from the very beginning, didn't you? I mean, right from the start. I'd like to go. Is there anyone I could...
Officer. Would you take Mr. Benedict Downton?
All right. Goodbye, genius.
Next episode, we'll be watching the second episode of season 2 entitled The Greenhouse Jungle.